Hello and welcome to the Self-Satisfied Podcast. I'm Britta.
And I'm Cassie. Britta, how was your week?
I have mixed feelings about it. COVID is doing a real thing out there right now.
Yeah, so I've heard.
Like, we have more people out at the company than we have had in the entire pandemic.
Shit.
So, that's fun. I have had a person out all week. One person just came back after being out with COVID. And then I have another person who is likely going to be out next week with COVID. So, hooray. Jeez. And I suppose we've been fortunate because nobody's had dangerous symptoms. And we have not spread it employee to employee at any time.
Right.
It's not been like, oh, this person got it, and then that person immediately got it, and then that person immediately got it. Like, they're clearly getting it from outside sources. Otherwise, I suppose work is going good. I was casually browsing the other day on our opportunities site and found that a store in Bloomington had a posting for a manager. So I asked my DM to look into that. So that's pretty exciting.
Nice. So is that your bright spot or do you have something else?
Oh, no. I have a couple of bright spots.
Oh my.
So these are not paid sponsors, unless they want to be. So my first bright spot, I order all the pet products from Chewy, who's pretty renowned for their customer service, and I've dealt with them a couple of times with issues, and they've been fantastic. But I ordered about $100 worth of stuff that was, like, not food and litter and stuff like that. I ordered, like, a Dremel for the dog's claws and a brush to demat behind their ears because they get ridiculous, and new bowls for the cats and stuff like that. And I was at work and it said that it got delivered, and I was like, okay, cool. And I get Chewy packages delivered all the time. We've never had any kind of issue with people taking things off of our porch or anything like that. And then I got home, totally forgot about it, was getting ready to go to bed, and then I was like, wait, wasn't I supposed to have a Chewy order delivered today? Go outside. There's nothing there. I asked Finley. He didn't see anything. Don't see it anywhere. So I tried to open a case with FedEx. Can't talk to a single human being at FedEx. They're basically like, here's some recordings. We'll open a case, but that's pretty much, we're not going to do anything. Fuck you. And so I emailed Chewy and I was like, hey, listen, you know, I can't get FedEx to do anything. And like, my hope was that they, as basically FedEx's boss in this scenario, would be like, hey guys, maybe find this girl's package, you know? And Chewy was literally like, we're just going to send you a new package. And they sent all the $100 worth of stuff over again. And then the day before that was set to be delivered, I come home and there's a Chewy box on the porch. And I was like, oh, my Chewy delivery. And I get up on the porch and see that it was already opened. And there was in marker written on the outside, hey, I just opened this. I thought it was ours. And when I opened it, I realized it wasn't. Checked the label and brought it back. So my neighbor had gotten the package and brought it back over when they opened it. And it was a bunch of shit they didn't order. So I emailed Chewy again and I was like, hey, found the package. Like, I know that this one is en route, but let me know what I need to do to get those products back to you. Because again, this wasn't just like dog food or something. It was pretty expensive stuff. And they were literally just like, oh, just donate it. And then my second non-paid sponsor break is Quip. I splurged at Target while I was Christmas shopping. And I bought one of the Quip smart brushes that tracks your brushing and gives you points. And we've talked before what a whore I am for badges and how I love a good streak. And embarrassingly, brushing my teeth is one of the hardest things. It has been throughout my whole life. I forget, and unless there is an actively bad taste in my mouth, I genuinely don't think about it until I'm like somewhere where a toothbrush is not accessible. And I'm like, what? These don't feel good. Yeah. And then I get home and I'm eating and whatever, and I just totally forget to brush my teeth. But I have brushed my teeth like every day for like 10 days.
Oh my God.
Like,
I I'm so proud of you. Twice a day even, right?
I've brushed my teeth. Yeah. Yeah. I'm on a 7-day streak almost. And I've brushed my teeth so much that one of my gums there for a minute was like, bitch, stop. You are scrubbing. We have built up a tolerance for your nasty ass and you're hurting us. So I also had to start using mouthwash because I was like, are you trying to get infected in there? What's happening? But yeah, so I was very happy. I mean, you know, I feel like the dopamine never lasts forever, so eventually I'll just stop brushing my teeth again. But it's, for now, I'm hygienic, and that's pretty dope.
Nice.
How was your week?
Oh. Well, my week was a lot less highs and lows, and mainly just lows. Oh. So, yeah, all right.
Yay for consistency.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no, like, no confusion there. I have had, like, I feel like the last month, and I think I've, maybe, I don't know if I've said this on here before, but I just am not, a, like, December is basically my worst month anymore anyways, because that's, like, I've got a lot of grief and trauma associated with that month, and it's my most hectic month at work, and this year it's just especially trying because I am doing it all basically as a single mom for the first time in my life. This is the very first time in my adult life that I don't have, like, a family thing to do, like, to go to. And I'm really, really struggling with that. Like, no family functions to do. Because my family doesn't do a whole lot. And so I've always kind of just, I guess, latched on to the in-laws. So I don't really have anywhere to go. And I don't have anything. Like, so it's been a tough month.
Yeah.
And work has been hectic. And I have just been trucking along.
Yeah.
Just trying to get by. So, yeah. That's been my week.
Well, listen. Open presents on Christmas morning. And then drive up here and pretend that you had to drive 3 hours to see your family on Christmas. And that's me.
Well, you basically are my family at this point, so. I have family, but you, like, 20 years.
Right.
I'd say
we're common much... law married at this point.
Yeah, exactly. We've been common law married for, like, 15 years at this point.
We've cycled through so many relationships. Right. And this one's sticking, okay?
It's my forever.
Speaking of which, I just remembered when my mom had her friend from school, Becky, come to visit. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I remember her saying something like talking shit about us not being friends after high school.
Oh, you and me? Yeah.
Yeah, because...
I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah, and I'm like, in your face. In her defense, technology helps a lot. Like, social media and texting. I'm like, you and I have moved all over the Midwest, it feels like. Like, we've been in and out of each other's areas for 20 years. And I'm like, who knows?
We haven't even been, like, we haven't lived within the same really vicinity in since
2012.
11, maybe. 2012.
Yeah. And then there was, you lived in Champaign for what, a year?
Yeah, because when I moved to Champaign in 2012, and then when I moved back, then you moved.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's been, like, early 2012 was the last time we, like, lived in the same area.
And that was pretty brief, yeah. But yeah, anyway, what was your bright spot?
Well, I had a birthday.
Yay! Happy birthday! I think that's when we were supposed to originally record this.
Yeah, we were supposed to record on my birthday. So I worked all day.
Fine.
I had the kids that night.
Fine.
And of course they argued. But I did get, like, I got a pretty necklace.
Ooh.
And I got a pack of M&Ms.
Nice.
And what else did I get?
I got you a teeny tiny something to bring down with me.
I got a teeny tiny something to look forward to.
It's a combination birthday and Christmas present, which is why I could afford to dish out $7 for it or whatever it cost.
Okay. I have literally not gotten anyone Christmas presents. I'm a broke bitch.
I didn't buy anything for anybody but my kids.
Yeah, same here. I bought Ryan something, but...
Yeah. Not me.
Well, okay. Listen. I kind of bought... It was like a
Oh, twofer. I didn't mean like you didn't buy me something. I meant I didn't buy anybody else something.
Whatever. Okay. I bought him a sex toy, okay? I bought him a long-distance sex toy.
Nice.
And it works with my long-distance sex toy.
Nice. It's a joint gift.
So, yeah, I mean, that'd be weird to get you.
Yeah, that'd be kind of weird. I mean, I love you. I love you.
You don't have to add all of that stuff in, honestly. Like, you can leave that out.
Oh, it's staying.
But, yeah, I mean, I got a necklace. I got... lots of M&Ms, which was great. I got an Ulta gift card.
Nice.
I think that's it. I think I bought myself something. I don't know. It's been a week, and I'm really tired, so. And I guess I have another bright spot, is that Christmas is almost over. Sorry. I'm really sorry. I'm usually happy-go-lucky, love Christmas, but this year I am so fucking excited that it is just a couple days away. And it's gonna be over,
and not because it's almost here, but because it's almost gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Get the fuck out of here, Christmas. We're done with you.
So ready for Sunday. So ready. So I'm sorry for everyone who has lots of holiday spirit. I'm typically on your side. This year, I'm not.
We're not hating on you for being happy. We're glad that you're happy that it's Christmas.
Yes.
We're just drowning in financial and emotional problems.
Yes. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Nice,
great.
Nice.
So this week we're talking about parenting, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a fun thing you do as an adult sometimes. You don't have to. We don't judge.
We don't?
No. We could have chosen not to do. No, it's too late now. It is.
Fuck.
We've done fucked up.
Okay.
If somebody had told
me. Thought I had now.
If somebody had told me that that wasn't even a fucking option. No.
Listen. I'm going to say, before having kids, parenting sounded great. Parenting sounded like a good idea. Right? Like, you're like, oh, look at these babies. They're so cute, and they're so lovable, and then you have kids, and you're like, I'm so tired all the time.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. I have always wanted to be a parent. Like, literally, I remember as a kid saying, like, if I had unlimited financial resources, I would have been a parent at 16. Like, first off, because of my sad, sad brain that doesn't believe in true love, I always assumed I would be a single mother. Like, and I wish that was a joke. But I 100% intended to find somebody who I was like, these genetics are good. Let's mix them with mine, and then I'm going to move half a country away and never see you again. Fuck that guy. Like, I can do it better on my own. I hate men. And luckily, I ended up having children with somebody who is a great dad, and, you know, he's a good guy, and I don't not want him to be involved with my children. We didn't work out, apparently. But, you know, anyway.
Surprise.
So even from the, and like, I would say for the most part, I do enjoy being a parent. But that being said, I love my children, and I really would not change my decision to have children for anything in the world. I do like being a mother. It's what I've always wanted to do. But it is a lot harder than they make it sound.
Like, yeah, it really is.
Like, even the quote-unquote horror stories about being a parent, like the parents who are like, no, you don't understand how hard it is. Like, you genuinely don't understand how hard it is until you're dealing with depression and ADHD and money problems and relationship problems. And on top of that, you are responsible for a human life, like whether that human is 6 weeks old or a year old or 14 years old, like you're molding them into the adult they're going to be. And where I'm at in my healing journey, I feel like I see how much of an effect, like, things my parents did or didn't do or whatever had on me as an adult, and ways that, like, my mind has essentially broken because of needs that weren't met or whatever that I didn't know I even had at that age. Like, at 10 years old, I didn't know that I needed somebody to validate my feelings all the time, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's had this huge snowball, a butterfly, whatever effect. And, like,
right.
Now I'm like, holy shit, how am I messing my kids up?
Like, I do the same thing where I'm like, I think, honestly, doing this podcast and also, like, working on myself has kind of opened my eyes to this a little bit more, too, because I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of times that my needs weren't met as a kid, and I'm like, but my mom really tried to, like, be a good mom, and I'm like, and I try to be a good mom, but I don't think I always meet my kids' needs, and I'm like, how am I fucking up?
Right, how am I
doing? Like, what kind of trauma am I creating?
Right, exactly. What effect is this gonna have on my kids in 20 years, you know, when they're my age, and, you know, whether mm-hmm. they have children or spouses or divorces or whatever they end up going through,
right.
like,
right.
what is the example I'm setting for them? You know, it's genuinely terrifying.
And everyone, like, every time I talk about that, where, like, you know, you always worry that you're going to be a good parent and everything. And I think that's just a pretty common
right.
and
concern. I do believe that that is a sign that you are probably a right. decent parent. Like, the fact that you're concerned.
That's what I'm always told. Like, everyone says that. If you're worrying about it, then that means you're a good mom. But it doesn't make you feel like a good mom.
Right.
Like, and I know, hearing that, yes, I get it. Yeah. I get where that's coming from. But it's, like, that doesn't change the right. fact that I still am making mistakes. And I still, like, am yeah. doing things. Things that would likely affect my kids at some point in their life.
Yeah, 100%. So it's
like, yeah, I'm concerned about it, but I don't know how to,
right.
like, I'm just as broken as my parents were.
Right. Me, me being worried about it and having the intent of being a good mother does not mm-hmm. stop my child from being traumatized in some way.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. Like, it's not going to change the effect that I'm having. And I think that's a big struggle I have, like, especially with Finley being his age, you know, 14. This is when I started really going through the shit, was his age, you know? And I'm right. like, I should be talking to him more about it. But mm-hmm. because I have spent my whole life being an emotional clam, I really struggle to have those conversations like, hey, are you doing okay? Is there anything you want to talk about? Am I doing okay? Like, is there anything you need from me? I don't know. Those conversations aren't easy. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I think it's also, like, I know I try to be open and honest, especially, like, with Sydney, because Sydney and Gunnar both, like, because they're both older. And I think one of the things, though, like, having those types of conversations, like, what do you need? I feel like I get scared because I'm like,
what if it's something, like, I can't give you?
Right. Or what if it's like, mom, you're fucking up.
Right. I need you to not be so this.
Like, how do I not do that? Like, I haven't figured it out
right,
yet.
Like, at what point is that conversation doing that thing where you're putting too much of your, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, kind of like that emotional incest, like, enmeshment, you know?
Enmeshment, yeah.
Like, where, by me asking him, what can I do to be a better parent? Like, my kid should not have to teach me how to be a better parent, you know?
Right.
But at the same right. time, I do want to make sure he knows that his needs are important to me.
Right.
But then again, like, and, you know, we'll get into neurodivergency a little bit, but, like, having ADHD makes it really hard because if he says, here's a thing that we could do that would make my life a little easier or would make me feel better about X, Y, or Z, I'm gonna forget eventually. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm gonna try to make a habit and I might do it for 2 or 3 days. Like, say he's like, you know, I'd like to spend an hour talking about our day at the end of the day before you go to bed. And I'll be like, sure. So, you know, after dinner for 3 days, we'll sit and talk about our day and what right. we went through. And then eventually
something comes up.
Exactly.
And you're like, I gotta record tonight, or I gotta.
Exactly. Right. And then, like, once the habit's broken, it's gone forever.
Right. I have that same problem where I'm like, I want to have dates with the kids where I was like, okay, once a month, I'm going to take each of them on a day with only them, where I'm like, just me and Gunnar are going to go out to eat, or just me and Cora, or something like that. And then 1 month, I would do that. And then the next month, I'd be like, okay, I rush to schedule it in. And then the month after that, I'm like, I don't have any time. And so then it just kind of falls by the wayside. And it's like, I don't know.
We're going to start with the basics, the things you think about, I guess, when you think about struggling with parenting, which is postpartum depression. So there are the baby blues, which consists of mood swings, anxiety, sadness, irritability, feeling overwhelmed, crying, trouble concentrating, appetite problems, sleep issues. I'm pretty sure I still have the baby blues.
I don't think they ever went away.
Postpartum depression, a lot of the symptoms are very much the same. Like depression, severe mood swings, like all of those really just sound like symptoms of depression. So depression, severe mood swings, excessive crying, trouble bonding with your baby, withdrawing or isolating from family or loved ones, eating too much or too little, sleeping too much or too little, fatigue, lack of interest in hobbies or doing things that you enjoy, intense anger, fear that you aren't a good mother, worthlessness, shame, guilt, inadequacy, etc., concentration issues, restlessness, severe anxiety or panic attacks, thoughts of harming yourself or your baby, and thoughts of death or suicide. It's hard, I think, for me, somebody who struggles to admit that there is something wrong with them anyway, I feel like I would have trouble saying this is more than the baby blues, you know? Right. Unless I'm, like, literally going to hurt my baby, thinking terrible thoughts, then I'm just convinced, well, you know, just a new mom and it's hard, so Right. This is normal. But I think that you know your body. If you feel like something is wrong, talk to a doctor. There is no harm in saying, hey, here's what I'm feeling. Is this normal? And your doctor, your OBGYN, they deal with a lot of pregnant people. They deal with a lot of new moms. They're going to be able to tell you, okay, that's pretty normal. Like, you're going to feel this way for a while. It's going to be okay. Let us know if it gets worse. Or, yeah, I feel like there's something more serious going on and maybe we should talk to somebody. Beyond PPD is postpartum psychosis, which includes all of that, but also confusion or disorientation, obsessive thoughts about your baby, hallucinations or delusions, sleep disturbances, which it didn't really elaborate on, but I used to have sleep paralysis a lot, which has only happened in times of super serious stress in my life. So I wonder if, like, that's what they mean, like really vivid nightmares, sleep paralysis, and then obviously insomnia, stuff like that. Excessive energy or agitation, like a manic kind of state, paranoia, or actual attempts to harm you or your baby. That's dangerous for obvious reasons. Fun random fact, fathers can also experience depression related to becoming a parent. So they can also have like a form of postpartum depression. The major differences are when a woman goes through postpartum depression, there are emotional reasons for that, like you're sleeping less, you have a whole nother life in your house that is causing more stress, you are struggling with issues of self-image or your sense of self. And then on top of that, they also have the fact that when they're pregnant, their body is full of estrogen and progesterone hormones, and then you have a baby and there is an extreme drop in those hormones, which literally causes differences to your brain. So some brains are going to react by throwing you into postpartum depression. And there's also decreased thyroid activity, which is going to cause things like fatigue and stuff. So while dads can be affected by a new baby, it's not really the same. It's definitely more of a mental health issue than a depression caused by a physical issue. It does affect about 50 to 75% of new moms, which was a pretty surprising number to me. Like, that's almost everybody.
Is that psychosis or?
That's PPD.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's postpartum depression. I assume psychosis is much less. I did not look up that statistic, but I hope it is not 75%. And then I just wanted to mention that I was listening to Armchair Expert the other day, and Brooke Shields was on, and she's written a book called Down Came the Rain about her experiences with postpartum depression recently. So I thought that might be something anybody who has struggled with that or thinks they may be struggling with that might want to look into and read.
There is also postpartum anxiety, which the symptoms kind of go hand in hand with postpartum depression. Poor sleep, trouble relaxing, and irritability. And a lot of mothers who experience postpartum depression also experience anxiety. This is also due to hormonal changes, so like in the postpartum period. But it can also occur when you quit breastfeeding. Like when I had breastfed my daughters for quite some time and then I quit breastfeeding, I had some hormonal changes there too because of that. And then a history of pregnancy loss also increases your risk of developing postpartum anxiety, or a history of anxiety before pregnancy, and then your symptoms may also return after delivery. Some women will experience panic attacks or have symptoms of obsessive compulsive disorder in the postpartum period. So, and it said 1 in 5 women experience postpartum anxiety. Kind of going back to like the history of pregnancy loss and everything. Before I had Sydney, I'd had a miscarriage. And Britta can attest to this because like when I miscarried, I was actually like shopping in Burlington Coat Factory for like baby stuff because I had a big baby shop there at that time. And so then I went to the bathroom and yeah. And I remember when I was pregnant with Sydney, I would not go in Burlington Coat Factory for like, how far along was I? Probably like 6 months until I would actually go in. And you're like, are you serious? And I was like, I will not go. No, I won't go.
It's cursed.
Right. And even, it was funny, like, even with all of my subsequent pregnancies with each of my kids, I was like, first trimester, nope, not stepping foot in there. And I mean, that's kind of like a silly little anecdote, I guess, now, but thinking back to that, like that, like the whole first trimester of each of my pregnancies, I was a wreck, like a panicked wreck, because I was just terrified of that happening again or having another miscarriage and stuff. Even, I mean, I feel like I was never quite comfortable enough to where I was like, okay, everything's gonna be fine, right. But that definitely played a factor in it and created a lot of anxiety,
yeah,
too. So I can see how that develops. And I think it's something, I had postpartum anxiety like crazy after I had Cora, but so yeah, that's that.
I can see how kind of the Burlington Coat Factory thing was kind of a compulsion, you know, like people with OCD,
right.
They flip the light switch 3 times because they think if they don't, you know, their mom's going to die or whatever,
right.
Strange thing they've put with that. So it definitely fits with that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I think whenever I had, after I had Cora, and I've talked about her being sick before, after she was born. And I remember when we would visit her in the NICU, they made us scrub up, basically. So, like, to go in and visit her, you had to roll your sleeves up, and you had to take this little brush and scrub your hands and your arms up to the elbows before you could go in. And every day when the kids would come home, I would be like, all right, change out of your clothes and wash your hands up to your elbows. And wash your face.
Right.
Like, you can't do anything before you do that. And so I'm like, obviously there were external factors that exacerbated that, but that was very much a compulsive, like,
yeah,
thing driven by postpartum anxiety.
Yeah, I feel like after I had Foster, probably for the first 6 months, I thought that I actually had PMDD, which was, like, extreme PMS, you know? I guess the symptoms I feel like are kind of similar. But looking back, like, maybe it was just postpartum depression and anxiety that was worse when, you know, I was about to start my cycle or whatever. I've never had, like, I think I've said before, I have used to say that I don't have anxiety. I get anxious, but I don't have anxiety. And then, like, going to California and being off Adderall for the first time in a long time, I was like, holy shit, I got anxiety. But even then, like, there's always a trigger for it. And I remember after Foster was born, I would just be sitting on my couch, like, relaxing before work. And all of a sudden, my heart would be racing, and I would have, like physical symptoms of anxiety. I would be shaky and stuff like that. Almost like I had drank a ton of caffeine on an empty stomach or something like that, but I hadn't, you know? And, like, looking back, I think that that was probably more of a, like, post-birth situation than a, like, PMS-related situation.
Right. Well, and I think, kind of going back to what you were saying about, like, talking to your doctor and how it's kind of hard because you're like, I don't know, is this just normal? Like, I think with all of my children, I had at least some level of postpartum depression where it was beyond the baby blues. I can remember specific instances with all three of them at one point or another where I was like, okay, that looking back, yes, that was definitely postpartum depression. But I never said anything to my doctor until like the moment I was like, it'd kind of be cool to kill myself. Like until I was, like, actually having suicidal thoughts after I had Cora. I never mentioned anything.
Right.
And so I'm like, I think that's so scary because it's, like, it was very difficult to go through postpartum depression and not have any help and not have anyone to kind of reach out to or anything like that. And I think, like, I don't know. It would have been so easy to just ignore that, too.
Right.
I guess.
That's what Brooke Shields was talking about on The Armchair Expert, is it's so stigmatized, postpartum depression and issues like that, because it makes you feel like you're a bad parent, you know?
Right, right. You're supposed to be happy.
Why don't I love being a mom? Everybody else seems to love being a mom, and I'm having such a hard time with it, but everybody else makes it look so easy. Why am I struggling? And so not only is it hard to be like, okay, maybe everybody feels like this and they're just not talking about it and it's normal, but also, okay, we've reached a point where this definitely isn't normal, but now I'm ashamed to talk about it because, you know, all of my close girlfriends also have had babies and they just seem to love every second of it because nobody wants to be the one person, like, I feel like we're lucky, and a lot of women now are more open with it, but nobody wants to be the one person in their friend group that's like, dude, fuck these kids, though.
Right. Which is kind of what I love about our friend group, is where we're like, dude, these kids are killing me. I'm exhausted, and I'm like, I'm having a terrible time right now. But saying that doesn't mean I love my kids any less.
Right. But I can't imagine being in, like, a friend group where I was scared to say something like that because I was afraid that my friends would be like, damn, you're a terrible person.
Right.
Because you don't love every second of what essentially for the first few weeks at the very least is a waking nightmare. Like, you're literally, like, just made for this screaming infant that
who can't tell you what they need.
Exactly. Like,
they can't, like, communicate to you their needs. So you're like, why are you crying? I don't know why you're crying. I just fed you. I just changed your diaper. Like, what do you need?
I'm holding you. I'm rocking.
I'm doing everything I'm supposed to be doing.
Yep.
Like,
and on top of that, they're waking you up every 2 or 3 hours and they're taking up space in your bed and they've ruined your body, quote unquote. You know, like, and you're just like, oh my God. No, I love it. Well, this is the best thing.
And I know, like, one thing that I struggle with after having kids is, well, like, both my daughters, I had breastfed them for a pretty substantial amount of time, but my son, I had some medical issues and I wasn't able to, and I remember breastfeeding my daughters was exhausting. It was a nightmare. Like, I felt like all I was here to provide for the, like, I was just essentially a milk factory. I wasn't anything else. And I was so tired and I was so just completely touched out all of the time. And I just wanted to not be touched for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was difficult. But then also on the other hand, when it came to my son, when I couldn't breastfeed him, I remember crying, like sobbing, because I was like, why can't I do this? Why can't my body do this? Like, it's supposed to.
Yep.
And so it's like, there's no, you never feel like you're giving enough.
Right.
And no matter what you're doing, there's always going to be a reason that it's wrong, right. or like that it's causing issues with you and stuff. So no matter what you're doing, it's hard.
Yeah. I remember when I breastfed Finley, first off, I was a absolute dairy cow. I made so much milk all the time, 24/7, whether he was feeding or I was pumping, like I had stores of it in my freezer, infinite amounts of milk. And I hated breastfeeding. I did it for 6 months with Finley. And then when I had started to wean him, I intended to wean him off before a year. But Finley being the easiest baby in the world, I was like, here's a bottle. And he's like, okay, that's dope. And that was it. Like, I was like, okay, I guess no need to drag this out. With Foster, again, I feel like there was probably some hormonal stuff, like possibly postpartum depression, definitely some anxiety. There were relationship issues. I was stressed at work. This was before I got diagnosed with ADHD. Like, it was hard. And I didn't make nearly as much milk. And I constantly felt like when I was at work, I would spend my whole 30 minutes pumping because he had to have milk for when I wasn't home, which was, you know, 40 hours a week. Mm-hmm. So I'd spend my whole break pumping, which was uncomfortable and annoying. And then literally the second I would walk into David's mom's house to pick him up, he would have been fine for the whole 8 hours he was there, just a happy-go-lucky baby. As soon as that kid smelled me, like, he used me as a pacifier, you know? All he wanted to do was eat.
Yeah.
So if I was around, he was basically breastfeeding because that's all he, like you said, like, I felt like that was my sole purpose to this kid was for him to be latched on to me. And like coupling that with the fact that I knew I wasn't making enough milk. Breast milk is a lot harder to prepare if you're using pumped milk than formula. Because with formula, like we used to just microwave a bottle of water, shake it up, make sure it was tested, and then mix the formula in. So it's like a 30-second process. You know, it's not hard at all. With breast milk, you can't microwave it or you're ruining it. So you had to like boil water and then put it in boiling water and let it heat up. And it takes forever and the baby's screaming or whatever. So a lot of times when I was at home, because he would still take a bottle, David would give him formula instead of breast milk. So I would be spending my whole 30-minute break getting a fucking ounce and a half of milk out, and then it would go bad because Dave wouldn't use it when I'm not home. And that was frustrating. And like, it was just, it was one of those things that like, in the end I was like, for my mental health, I'm switching to formula. This is fucking killing me. Like, I can't do it anymore.
Right. And I think that's one important thing like to point out is I'm definitely pro breastfeeding. I'm pro formula feeding. I think I'm one of those people who, you know, fed is best. Yes. I breastfed for a very long time. I breastfed Cora until she was probably 3 years old. It was just terrible. Yes.
Right. Like I'm 100% for breastfeeding if it's something that you're capable of, you know what I mean? Like mentally and physically, if you can do it.
Yeah.
But I'm also not the type of person who is going to sugarcoat it and make it sound like it's amazing. And I mean, if it really is for some people, again, I have this same view on romantic relationships. I'm like, sure, I bet you guys really like each other. Okay, that's made up. But like, so when I hear somebody who's like, oh, you know, it was such a wonderful bonding experience and I loved every moment of it. And I'm like, really? When that baby got its first tooth and you bit your titty, you were cool with it? You loved that?
I'm not going to say, like, there were moments where I'm like, yes, this is a nice bonding experience and stuff between, because it was kind of, it kind of felt like something that only I could do. And so it's like, okay, that makes me feel good. And I know breastfeeding is really healthy. And I know, like, I think the only reason, honestly, that I did it so much with Cora was because I still had that postpartum anxiety. And I'm like, she needs to be as healthy as possible. She needs to be so healthy because she almost wasn't. But I had those moments with Gunner too, and he was formula fed. I think breastfeeding's great, but I also think people get so passionate about it. And I think that it's definitely something people are talking about a lot more now, which I think is wonderful. But in that, I feel like if you're talking about breastfeeding, don't do it in a sense that makes people who aren't able to breastfeed feel lesser than. because regardless of whether they can't do it because of medical reasons or just because of mental health reasons, like,
or that's just because they don't fucking want to. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's nothing wrong with that as long as you're taking care of your child. You have to do what's best for you and the baby.
To me, I have the exact same mentality about breastfeeding as I do about abortion, okay? Like, mm-hmm. with my children, I breastfed them both for as long as I could handle it. I think that, again, if I ever have another child and I'm capable of breastfeeding, I'll do it again, even though I know full well mm-hmm. that I don't enjoy it, you know?
Right.
But it's your body, your choice. You know what I mean? If you're a baby, right. it's your right. choice. So exactly. if you are exactly. pregnant and you don't want a baby, get an abortion. I don't give a shit. Would I get an abortion? I don't know. I can't, like personally, like right now, I'm like, if somehow I was immaculately concepting a child at this moment, I'm like, at this point, I'm like, I consider it, but I don't think that I could emotionally handle something like that, but I would not judge anybody in my situation or in any situation that was like, I can't handle having a child or another child right now, and this is the best option for me and my life. No judgment whatsoever. That's
right.
Doesn't it fucking affect me? Like, and same with you breastfeeding your kid. Like, if you're giving them formula, I don't care what brand you're giving them. Like, if they're fed and they're thriving, then
fantastic. Wonderful. You're doing right. great. Exactly. Keep it up, Mom.
Exactly. You're doing everything you can, so keep at it.
Keep at it.
Just don't starve the child.
Right.
Unless that child's a real pain in the ass, then.
Some...
I'm kidding. Cut it out.
If you listen to the right-wing conservatives, making them hungry will make them a harder worker.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. You're welcome.
Disclaimer, please feed your children. I'm joking.
Oh.
Good luck, kid. So some common struggles with being a new parent. So even if you don't have something as severe as postpartum anxiety on an official level, there's a lot of new things to be anxious about. You're worried about your kid's health. Like, even if they're a perfectly healthy child, there's a lot of scary stories out there. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. So you could be worried. Like, I remember watching and being like, are they breathing? Is he breathing?
Mm-hmm.
He's breathing. Mm-hmm. Let me just... Mm-hmm. Okay, he's good. He's good. I made him cry, but he's all right. And worried about their development, you know? Like, once they start to get a little older, are they rolling over how they should be? Are they sitting up when they should be? Are they eating what they should be?
Right.
Are they talking like they should be? Worried about other kids in the home? Am I giving my other children enough attention because I'm so preoccupied with the baby now? Am I giving the baby enough attention, or am I more preoccupied with my other children? Worried about your relationship and not only the effects that a new baby might have on your relationship, but just normal relationship problems that come up that now you feel like you don't have the time or energy to address because you're tired and you're taking care of a new baby. Worried about managing an infant and work and housework and your love life and your hygiene and your hobbies and like, there's a million things to do. You also have recovery from a childbirth, whether you gave natural birth and had stitches or no stitches, or you had a C-section, or you had a traumatic childbirth where, you know, maybe there was hemorrhaging, you had to have a blood transfusion, or you were in the hospital for an extended amount of time, your baby was in the hospital for an extended amount of time. You know, there are a million different recovery paths that there could be that could make it a bigger struggle. You're getting less sleep, even in the best case scenario, even if you have a newborn 1 day old baby that sleeps better than every other 1 day old baby in the world, you're still not getting as much sleep as you were before. Also, fuck you. All the things you have to learn as you go. Like, I don't think in what is commonly referred to as the best country in the world, we don't have a lot of access to things like parenting classes and stuff like that. So there's a lot of things that when you come home from the hospital, you're just figuring it out. And, you know, I don't want to say I didn't have a strong support system. I feel like I could have asked for help from my parents, his parents, friends, you know, whatever at any given time. But, like, I was going to fucking do that, you know? Like, I don't ask for help. Gross.
Right, right.
So, you know, it was basically just figuring things out as I went. And that never stops. again, my oldest is 14 years old and I still feel like I'm winging it. You know what I mean? Like I'm just trying to mm-hmm. do the best I can. Managing or possibly even restructuring your social life. So you could either not have as much time to spend with your friends just because you have a new baby. You might have, I feel like I had my first child when I was 20 and I still had a lot of friends that had not gotten out of the phase I had been in prior to, you know, dating David and getting pregnant to where they were drinking a lot, doing drugs a lot, etc. And unfortunately, it's not like I cut them out of my life and was like, don't ever talk to me because you do these things. Like, again, it wasn't like a judgment thing. It was more like, I don't want my child in that environment. So now I can't go hang out at this person's house because I know they're going to smoke weed and I don't want my child around that, you know? So, right.
And I think it helped that we all had kids around the same time, like our close friend group, because I kind of wonder, like, I'm like, what would have happened if we hadn't, because we were still doing, like, I mean, I wasn't going to stop drinking or smoking pot because
I had a baby.
Because right, we're
yeah. Yeah, 100%. And again, like I said, like, it's not like it comes from a place of, like, judgment. It was just, that was not.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That was not how I wanted the environment I wanted my kid in. And, you know, obviously that was more important to me than going and spending 2 hours at mm-hmm. X person's house.
Right, exactly.
Unwanted advice or help. So, you know, on the flip side of having to learn things as you go or being afraid to ask for help, like you might have a parent or an in-law that is constantly, you know, coming over unannounced and trying to take over, or they might be, oh, you're doing this wrong, oh, you're doing this wrong, hey, you're doing that wrong, or you have, I think gentle parenting is a good example of this, like, mm-hmm. children our age, the millennials, we were not, most of us, gentle parented. We were, you know, we got our ass beat if we stepped out of line, and
very anti-gentle.
And when your kid is acting a fool at grandpa's house and they're like, oh, that kid just needs his ass smacked, you know, or whatever, and you're like, no, we don't do that, like, we're just gonna redirect mm-hmm. him, then, you know, they may be like, oh, you just don't know what you're doing, and he's gonna, you know, act like this forever because you can't control him or whatever. Like, yeah, he's a human being. I'm not meant to control him.
Right.
You know, that could come in a variety of ways. We had a friend whose mother-in-law would do, like, oh, what was it? Her daughter had a diaper rash, and I think the mother-in-law put Skin So Soft on it or something absurd, and it, like, the kid had super sensitive skin anyway, and it just mm-hmm. like ate through her skin on her butt, you know what I mean, mm-hmm. caused lesions because it wasn't diaper rash cream. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, so you have to worry about that. Like, how are other people interacting with your kids or interacting with you, judging you, etc. The plethora of changes to your body. So when you're pregnant, obviously there's a lot of things growing. Your stomach gets a lot bigger. Your boobs grow. Your hair is growing in amazingly and thick and luscious, and then you have the baby and you're left with this empty sack of a belly, and your hair within 5 months, I had bald patches like at the temples mm-hmm. of my head because the drop in hormones just made my hair fall out. You might put on weight during pregnancy and not lose it after pregnancy. There are a lot of people, it was a weirdly fat phobic big concern of mine that both of my children, like my first one I had when I was 20, and I was afraid that it would change my metabolism, like that the hormones and stuff would mess with my metabolism and that I wouldn't be able to keep weight off like I do. And then when I was 27 and had my second one, I was like, oh my God, it's definitely going to happen this time, right? Because I'm older and my metabolism's going to slow down anyway. And that was a big fear of mine. And, you know, it's a fact for a lot of people. And again, I don't think that's right. Like, I don't, like, it's fucked up to think that way.
Right. But it's something that is kind of
pressed on you by society, you know?
Exactly. Thank you.
Like, society clearly treats fat women differently than it treats thin women. And so it's going to become a fear. And then if you are on the flip side of that and it did change your metabolism or you did gain weight that you weren't able to lose after the baby, it's going to fuck with your self-esteem because people are going to treat you different because society is fucked up. There are stretch marks, obviously, on any part of you that might have grown, which is a lot of it. Changes in your skin. So my first baby caused the onset. I never really had trouble with acne. I got a few zits up until I was 19, 20 years old. My first baby ruined my skin. 4 years I had acne after I had Finley, like, literally until I got pregnant with Foster when he was six. Like, and then Foster fixed it. Thanks, kid. So, you know, you might start breaking out more than you're used to during pregnancy, after pregnancy. And then changes to your breasts. I've always been very, very small chested, but before I got pregnant with my first one, I had, like, decent B cups, okay? And everybody was like, oh man, like once you have the baby, your boobs will grow, like, and they'll stay bigger. And I'm like, ah ha ha, fantastic. And they got up to, they were like decently sized when I was pregnant. And I was like, yes, stay this way. And then when I was breastfeeding, they were insane. And I was like, no, get out of here. That's too much. And then post-second child, I now literally have to buy any cute bras from a special website for flat-chested women because I don't even have an A cup. Like, they're gone. And, you know, there's obviously, if you're already big-chested, then there's gravity to contend with and your skin stretching and stuff like that. So there's a ton of things that happen to your body that are going to fuck with your self-esteem or just how you see yourself. We already talked about the dilemma and the shame around breastfeeding, but that's another just like unwanted advice. You know, there are people, if you're not breastfeeding, they say, oh, I can't believe you're not breastfeeding. If you are breastfeeding, they're like, I can't believe you do that in front of people, you know, like whatever. There's always some kind of fucking judgment no matter which way you go.
Right.
And then relationship issues. So I feel like, again, we were young when we had our first kids, and a lot of people in our friend group had their first kids together when we were all 19 to 21 years old. And I feel like a lot of people, and I'm not exempting myself from this because David and I got pregnant really early into our relationship. We were together for like 6 months before I got pregnant. So I literally just got lucky with the fact that we parent well together. But a lot of people had a baby with a guy and then this guy did not expect to do anything as a parent. You know what I mean? Like, you're the mom, you do it. You clean the house, you change the diapers, you teach the kid. That's the mom's job. So it's very important that if you're in a relationship, honestly, I would say if you're in a relationship where you're having sex with somebody, honestly, it's probably a good idea to have a conversation about, one, what do we do if there's a pregnancy that we didn't expect? Do we want to keep a baby? Are we cool with abortions? Like, these are, especially, like, I feel like as a man, if you're putting your dick in somebody, you need to know what they're going to do if they're going to get pregnant, because if a guy gets me pregnant right now and I'm like, I can't keep this baby, I'm getting an abortion, and he's going to be pissed off about it, I'm like, well, you should have asked before we fucked, I guess. And then beyond that, like, conversations about what do you feel like your role as a parent would be? Like, what do you think your jobs and parenting are? Because it is important to see eye to eye on that, and you do not want to bring home a new baby just to find out that your significant other does not plan to do anything.
That's one thing I think is one of the perks about dating after you've had kids is like you get to see, if you're dating somebody who has kids, you're like, I already see what kind of parent you are. All right, cool. Yeah, right. So, I mean, not ideal, not like the perfect scenario by any means, but I mean, it does have its perks.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also a big topic right now on the internet world is weaponized incompetence. A lot of people expect women to inherently know how to parent and how to mother and how to do all of the things to take care of a house and a baby, and then use the excuse, well, I don't know how to do that. to get mm-hmm. out of doing things. So I don't know how to change a diaper. Okay, well, neither did I 20 minutes ago, but now I do. I did it. See, right. You can figure it out, too.
I actually just had this conversation with the guy I'm seeing about my ex would do that with cooking, right? So he was doing something where he didn't know how to make it, and I was like, okay, walking him through, like, this is what you do to, like, mince garlic, or I don't know, something silly, but, like, walking him through that, and, like, we were talking about that, my ex would be like, I don't know how to cook, and it's like, okay, but I didn't know how to cook when I first started cooking, like,
I wasn't born learn. With this knowledge.
Right, right.
Vagina does not come with cooking skills.
right. No one knows how to do anything. Like, you have to literally go out and teach yourself. You have to learn.
Also, funny story, you don't need your wife to explain how to mince garlic. You have the fucking internet on your phone.
I wasn't using that. Like, we were having a discussion.
Yeah, right.
But
I'm just saying that, like, even putting the... Like, I shouldn't have to teach you how to cook or how to do laundry or how to change a diaper. Right. You can learn it the same way I did. And I'm right. the type of person where I don't mind helping you or giving you tips or letting you know how I do it or whatever. But, like, so many, maybe people in general, but obviously in my experience, I date men, so it's men. They kind of put that emotional labor on you, you know? Like, okay, right. I don't have to cook, but I have to sit here and tell you every step of the process. Like, that's not right. me getting out of the chore. Right. Now I have to sit here and talk about the fucking chore. Why can't I go play Call of Duty while you just fucking do it like you do when I cook?
Exactly. And I think it's like, I remember like the last year of us being together where I was like, I'm just not going to cook anything. I'm gonna order out and figure it out, or you can cook, like, pizza rolls. I don't fucking care at this right. point, because I've been cooking for 10 years. I mean, it's exhausting to be, like, to carry that labor, right. I guess.
And again, I do want to specify that in my marriage, this was not a huge issue. Like, there were a few right. things early on. Like, I remember one point David saying he didn't know how to do laundry, so I used to do all of our laundry. But, you know, by the time we moved up here, he learned. He, at the end of our relationship, was doing 90% of the house cleaning, 90% of the cooking. He was doing all the grocery shopping. He was doing all the laundry. You know, like, he was definitely competent. So this isn't something I'm not, like, complaining about a previous relationship. I think it just pisses me off on other women's behalf, because I know it's something that a lot of right. women go through. And I'm sure men experience it, too. I don't want to say that it's only women. Like I said, that's like my experience of the stories I hear, but I'm sure the same thing happens with women. And I, as a matter of fact, I would say I'm sure I do the same thing. Like, for instance, right now my bathroom sink has a drip. It's just constantly drip, drip, dripping. It's loud as hell at night for some reason. It gets louder when I'm sleeping. It's like yelling at me. And like my instinct is like, you know, David's bringing Foster up for Christmas, and I'm like, can you, like, fix that faucet while you're here? But, like, it's something I can easily Google. You know what I mean? And I'm sure on the flip side, when it comes to men's jobs, women do it too. But I think that when you have a new baby, that is an especially prevalent issue because, again, women are just expected, like, you're a woman. You know how to do all that. Like, no, I don't. I'm literally just guessing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I still don't. We've already made it clear. We've been recording for an hour now, and I think we've made it very clear. We don't know what the fuck we're doing when it comes to parenting. I can change a diaper now, sure, okay, but can I actually be a great mom? Probably not. Yeah, I'm figuring it out as I go.
Right.
Maybe by the time I have grandkids, I'll be like, here's how you do it, guys.
And then there are significant changes to your level of desire. So in my experience, it was a significant decrease. Both times.
Zero.
Both times.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was hormonal or physical for me, because there are a ton of changes to your body. So you have likely launched a child out of you, okay? So does birthing a baby ruin your vagina? No. Does it change your vagina? Gets a little different.
Does it make you want to put anything in that vagina?
Ever again? No.
No.
Stay far away.
About that, nothing, yeah. But, like, I was very self-conscious about just how different I felt. Like, over the last 15 years, I've had varying changes in lubrication. Like, oh, it doesn't do it enough. Oh, now it's doing it too much. Cool. That's too much. Right. What, you're overcompensating, friend.
Right.
So, like,
where were you before? Right.
And then maybe you had to have stitches and you're literally afraid to, you know, do anything because you don't know if it's going to hurt or whatever. After I had my first kid, we literally didn't have sex for a year because I just didn't feel right in my body ever, it seemed like. And again, like just with hormones and stuff, I was not at all interested in it. And then Foster, it didn't take quite that long, but we definitely never really recuperated after I had him. So
I remember when I had Sydney, and like, yeah, at first, like my sex drive had kind of diminished and everything. But I remember you and I talking about that where you're like, I just don't want to have sex ever. And me being like, what? That's so weird. And then after I had Cora, that's like my sex drive was basically non-existent, and it was pretty non-existent for the majority of the time that I was breastfeeding her too. And that was like a hormonal thing where it was like, I mean, it caused all these changes and my desire was just not there. And I mean, I had a fucking kid attached to me all the time too. Right. So it's like, I didn't want to touch anyone else.
I don't want anything to touch me ever again.
Right, exactly. Certainly not a penis. Like, ugh.
I also got, and again, we're going to talk about, you know, neurodivergence, but because of overstimulation, like, I was constantly overstimulated, mm-hmm. which meant, like, sometimes my cat would jump on my lap and I would just reflexively knock her off of me because, like, her stepping on me hurt. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I wasn't expecting it and David grabbed me or touched me in some way, like, I would flinch, like, because being touched was uncomfortable for me because I was already overstimulated. And then, of course, that, you know, hits his self-esteem because he thinks I'm flinching because I don't want him to touch me when it's, I don't want anything touching me. I can barely stand my clothing.
And I think, like, honestly, because one of the things that happened after I had Cora was, like, we didn't communicate that. Like, I didn't communicate, like, it wasn't, like, I'm not attracted to you or I'm not, like, in love with you anymore or anything like that. It was just, like, I have no desire and I don't want anything to touch me, but we never said anything about that. Like, I never mentioned that. And then it was kind of, and then he would get his feelings hurt because he's like, why doesn't she want me anymore? And I'm like, and then like a year later, it ended up being like this big thing. And I'm like, it wasn't anything to do with you. Like, it wasn't anything, that wasn't why. So I think, honestly, if that's something that you do struggle with, like if you've had a child relatively recently, or it's something that you've had issues with, then communicating that to your partner is huge because, like, it can create some really big misunderstandings as far as that goes, too.
So those are some of the very common struggles. Do you have anything to add to that?
I think I've added along the way.
I tried to make it as a comprehensive list as possible. Those were the things I experienced or I knew people experienced.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think, like, body changes are one thing that I had struggled with. I've had a lot of body self-esteem issues my whole life, and borderline probably body dysmorphia. I definitely think, like, having kids exacerbated that, like, to the extreme, because I just, like, society wants you to be pretty and youthful and vibrant, and that's what they tell you is okay, and you're, I mean, to be honest, I'm not that after after I had a kid. No. No, and when I was pregnant, I know, everyone would comment, you're glowing. That's what you'd hear, you're glowing. And if you woke up and you felt like shit and you looked in the mirror and your face was, ashy and white because you're exhausted, you're like, oh, I'm not glowing, so I'm not doing this right.
Right.
So, I don't know, I feel like having kids is mentally, physically, emotionally, every form exhausting. So, yeah, if you're considering having kids, you know, go for it. Go for it. It's so fun.
Rewarding.
Guys, I promise we love our children. We are so thankful for them every day, but we are also very tired.
We also just want to go die in a hole.
Yeah, sometimes. Not all the time, but...
So, a very common issue these days is neurodivergence in both children and in adults. It's something that is being recognized.
That it's not necessarily a common issue these days, because it's more known these days, more prevalent.
Yeah, it's definitely more recognized now, so there are more adults getting diagnosed or recognizing that they have ADHD or autism, and then there's more awareness of those symptoms. So, you know, you see it more in children being diagnosed, or you see the signs or symptoms of it in children a lot more. I have ADHD. Cassie has ADHD. I am 99.9% sure my oldest has the exact brand of ADHD that I have. Like, our issues are very, very in line with one another. And then my youngest is much more the classic hyperactive version of ADHD. And I think we haven't had him assessed or anything, but I think that he could be veering towards being on the autism spectrum a little bit. I don't think he's quote-unquote severely autistic by any means, but he does definitely have some traits that I don't see in me or other family members. So some of the problems with children that have ADHD or autism are eating. So I thought that Finley was a picky eater when he was little, and I was not nearly the gentle, understanding parent when he was little. Or, well, I won't say I wasn't gentle, I guess.
You're a real asshole.
Beat my kid. I was very much, I was the kind of kid who, my parents, I remember falling asleep at the dinner table because they were like, you're eating what's there. Right. And I would literally fall asleep at the table because my mom would make cube steak with mushroom gravy, which literally makes me gag to think about right now. There was no way I was touching that as a kid. Right. And I would literally sleep at the table overeating it. And I think that was one of those things that as an adult, I was like, okay, he has to eat what I make because those are the rules. And I would sit and try to make him eat different things. And there were some times where I was definitely right. I remember when he was 4, I made him pizza rolls and I was really excited for him to try pizza rolls, and he would not touch them, and I made him sit there and he cried, and I was like, you're just gonna try one pizza roll, just take a bite and then you can get up and I will make you something else, and you know, you can do whatever, but you're trying one bite of this pizza roll. And I remember David's mom thought I was the goddamn devil because I made him sit there and cry until he tried one. And then he tried it and he ate a ton of them. You know, he loved them. Fucking goddamn pizza rolls. But he grew out of it. 2016, we did Whole30, and we actually bribed him. We said we would buy him this expensive rare wrestling action figure if he did Whole30 with us and at least tried to eat everything that we made. And Whole30 is, you know, no soy, no gluten, no sugar, no dairy. It's very, very strict. Everything is homemade, and it was a lot of more interesting food than we typically made. You know, it was definitely not chicken nuggets and fries, that's for damn sure. And he did really good, and I feel like it really opened up his palate and his adventurousness for eating. And then recently we went to California this summer, and my friend Jose is a total food snob, and he is one of those guys that, with the exception of my hard limits, onions, he's like, you have to get this as it comes, you know? You have to get it the way it is and try it that way. And, Finley had a burrito with tomatoes in it. He hates tomatoes and he ate it, you know, like he did really, really good. So he is at 14 years old, like willing to try new things and take a leap occasionally. He's got his hard limits. No beans. Do not give that kid a fucking bean. He will lose his mind. Foster eats like five things. And when he was a baby and first started eating solid foods, I was very, very conscious about the fact that, like, we quote-unquote ruined Finley because we fed him safe foods, you know? We didn't give him things that we thought he wouldn't like or whatever, and then he grew into these habits that he didn't break until he was older. So with Foster, I fed him everything. Like, when he was little, he ate everything. Now he eats literally five different foods, period. Like, I had to, he's coming up for Christmas and he's going to spend a few days with me afterwards. And I had to text his dad, like, what is he eating right now? Because I have to make sure I have things that he'll actually eat in the house. And then he's like, oh, he's really into crackers and pepperoni. And I'm like, okay, do you get deli pepperoni or do you get Hormel pepperoni? Because I know this kid. And if I get deli pepperoni and he eats Hormel pepperoni, he will not fucking eat deli pepperoni because he'll be like, that's fucking weird. Mm-hmm. It feels weird. It looks weird. I'm not having it. So that's a big issue. Even me as an adult, breakfast is probably my most, like, when I'm clearly neurodivergent because I will only eat one thing for breakfast for months at a time. I've been on blueberry waffles for, like, just Eggos for 6 months. One morning, I will eventually wake up, I'll make myself two waffles, I'll butter them, I'll put syrup on them, I'll cut one, and I'll put it in my mouth, and I'll be like, that is fucking disgusting, and I won't touch waffles again for 6 months, and I'll move on to a different food. Like,
see, my thing with food is, and my kids have the same issue, and Sydney's not really picky, so I would say, like, out of all of my kids, and I don't know, like, this sounds terrible, but I'm like, she's like the least neurodivergent. And I'm not saying there's not some there. There very well may be. But she is like the one who got the most neurotypical genetics somehow. But like Cora has been diagnosed with ADHD and she's like Britta's son, very hyperactive. I'm more inattentive, and I think Gunner has been, we've had him assessed before, but we need to get him reassessed because they were basically like, yeah, it could be ADHD, it could be anxiety, I don't know, because he's, you know, pretty much inattentive like me, where it could, and you have that a lot, where for years people thought my ADHD was just anxiety. Anyways, I know with Sydney, she's not very picky, and she loves to cook, she loves to try new things, but Cora and Gunner are very much, like, Cora eats, they're very texture-driven, and I'm like that, too.
Yeah.
I'm not a picky person. I love all kinds of flavors, but I cannot, like, the flavor of watermelon, love it. I cannot eat a fucking watermelon to save my life because I hate that texture so much. Like, if you put a watermelon in my mouth, like, a tiny piece of watermelon, I'm like, oh, oh, oh. But I love everything watermelon flavored. I love if I had watermelon, like, a watermelon smoothie or something, I would love that. And I don't like juices because I've never liked juices because they're too thick. Does that make sense? Does that make sense to anybody? No, yeah, it doesn't make fucking sense to anybody.
Neurodivergent makes sense to this bitch.
There is. So, like, Cora is picky in the, I guess, the best way, where she's picky, where she just hates the texture of meat. Which, I mean, yeah, you probably need some meat, but she loves vegetables. That's all she wants to eat. She will sit there and she'll eat a fucking, like, an entire thing of broccoli. Like, an entire, I have made this kid her own bag of broccoli for dinner, like, on multiple occasions. Where I'm like, all right, we're having dinner, and here's what we're having. And then I also made Cora an entire bag of broccoli. So, and Gunner, like, Gunner is one of those where he never liked the texture of vegetables. And we tried that, try one bite, or try this, and he would cry because we would make him try a bite of a carrot. And that was before I really kind of understood sensory issues a little bit more. Because I know I had the same experience as a kid. I remember being a kid and crying because I didn't want to try it, or I would try one bite and I'm like, I cannot swallow a carrot. Don't make me swallow a cooked carrot. And like with Gunner, I'm like, okay, you're going to try it. And, like, after looking into that more, I started reading up on, you know, that kind of, I guess, method, or, like, the finishing your plate method. And that causes a lot of, like, that can cause a lot of unhealthy relationships with food. And, like, I know I've known people who have been raised by the finish everything on your plate thing, and they have so many issues with overeating, or, you know, like, I'm full to the brim. My body is telling me not to eat anymore, but I've been raised to eat everything on my plate. It's like, no, listen to your body.
Yeah, right. So my kids are also very, very texture-based. Like, Finley can't stand any inconsistency in texture, so, like, he likes mashed potatoes, but he only likes school mashed potatoes because they're made from potato flakes mixed up. There's no lumps whatsoever. If I make homemade mashed potatoes and he catches one teeny tiny piece of unchopped up potato, he's fucking done. It's why he doesn't like beans, because they have the skin on the outside, so they kind of pop, and then they're mushy in the middle. Can't stand them. I, in a weird way, especially for somebody who is neurodivergent, I love weird textures in food. Like, my favorite thing about sushi is the multitude of textures in one roll, like, one piece of sushi. Like, you know, you might have crunchy stuff on top of it, and then you have the little tobiki or whatever, the little eggs on it that, like, pop in your mouth, and then the fish is a little bit, like, it's soft, and then the rice is chewy. Like, there's so much going on that I absolutely love it, and I'm that way with all food. Like, the more texture, the better. I love, like, when I used to make meatloaf all the time, my favorite thing was making a leftover meatloaf sandwich with meatloaf and a roll and mashed potatoes or whatever. Like, I'm all about it.
Bad memories of meatloaf as a kid. I will not eat it because I have so many memories. That's another food where I was like, I cannot take the texture of it. I don't even mind the...
I always hated it when I was a kid because it always had onions in it, no matter who made it. So, like, when I was an adult and made my own meatloaf, I loved it.
I've never liked it.
I could see where that would be a texture that would fuck somebody up, though. Like, for sure. Another issue with Foster, on top of texture, like mouthfeel or whatever, is, and this is a sign of autism, I guess, I just learned recently, is he does not like his hands messy at all. So he won't eat messy foods because he doesn't want anything on his hands. So he won't eat pizza. First off, just soak that in. My child won't eat pizza. But you know what one of his favorite meals is? Is the cheese sticks like you get from Papa John's. Like, it's a fucking pizza without sauce. And then he dips it in marinara sauce.
I remember, because I got cheese sauce and he freaked out.
Yeah. Because he won't get any sauce or anything on his hands if he's just dipping it, you know? But if he gets a piece of pizza and he touches the sauce, then he gets sauce on his hands and he gets upset about it. So, like,
yeah. And if you explain it like that, it makes sense.
Foster also has to be mobile. Everything he eats has to be portable, and he has to be able to take it with him where he goes. He does not sit at the table for a meal, period. He does at school, I guess, but that was one of those things that I said, like, I was raised, like, I had to eat what was made, and we ate at the table, you know? Like, eating in the living room was a special treat kind of thing. Finley, I feel like I made him eat at the table more when he was a kid, but Foster literally... we just don't have dinner at the table. You know what I mean? Like, he has dinner on the couch, he has dinner in his room, whatever. Like, he walks around and eats his one of five foods that he is capable of handling at any given time, and that's it. So, lots of trouble with eating and reframing your thoughts about that when you have a neurodivergent kid. Another issue is energy levels. Like we've mentioned, both of our youngest are very hyperactive children. By which I mean, if they are not hyper-focused on something, then they are incredibly loud. They're incredibly mobile. They're jumping. They're doing flips. They're banging on things. Like, there's not a moment's peace when Foster is around. He's a loud, active child, which can be stressful when you're tired or whatever. There's a lot of trouble with rules and boundaries. A lot of times Foster has trouble following rules that he doesn't understand why they're rules. So it's not like he's purposely misbehaving, but if he doesn't understand the purpose behind a rule, it's like he can't remember that it's a rule. If you tell him you can't do X thing because why? A good example is one time he was playing in the front yard and he goes out there and plays with sticks, you know, like flings them around and pretends to be a marching band leader or whatever he's doing. And then one day I had a meeting, and typically when I pull into work, it's dark and I get out and I walk behind my car, lock it with the fob and go inside. And then when I come back, I walk behind my car, go in my car and get inside. And I had a meeting at another store, so I happened to walk in front of my car and it was really sunny. And I was like, oh, there's a scratch on the side of my car. Like, where did that come from? And I'm like looking at it and I was like, whatever, it's not a huge deal. And then I walk around to the front of my car and there is a design across the front. He has a very telltale way of drawing faces, and it had the very, like, quintessential Foster eyeballs, and I was like, what the fuck? And when I asked him about it, you know, he just wanted to decorate my car for me. He knows I love when he draws, so he's just drawing on the car because he knows I love that he draws. And it was a sweet sentiment, you know what I mean? Like, he just didn't realize that that's a $30,000 car, and now it's got eyeballs on the front of it. But, you know, I explained to him, like, hey, you can't draw on other people's property. Like, some things are really expensive, or they're hard to replace or hard to repair. And, you know, how would you feel if I went in with a marker and drew on your TV? You know, and I explained that to him, and we haven't had any trouble with it ever since. You know what I mean? Like, he felt bad for what he did and has never done it since. But if I were just like, you can't draw on cars, then there's no, like, explanation, and he just doesn't, it does not compute. And I feel like I'm the same way. Like, at work all the time, whenever we have a new policy or a new procedure that rolls out, I feel like I almost annoy my DM because I'm like, okay, well, why does this have to be this way? Like, whatever. And it's not like I'm trying to be indignant. I'm not trying to be, like, combative about it. But, like, if you help me understand the benefit of this step or this procedure, then I will actually do it because I get why I have to do it. I just don't like to do or not do things out of because I said so. Like, because I said so is a common parent tactic that will not work on my child.
I mean, it's something that I think is not very successful with neurodivergent children, but I also think it's something that even a neurotypical child, like, yeah, you owe your children explanations. Like,
why they can't, like, do
something? Not everything needs to be because I said so. They need a reason to so they know why this is wrong.
Yeah.
Or
so they learn the lesson behind the rule. So they can apply that lesson to other things. So, like, if you tell them you can't draw on my car because I said so, then what stops them from going and drawing on another person's car?
And also, you
are damaging something else.
Right. And you aren't, like, your children aren't your property or your, they're not there just to obey you. Exactly. Like, that's not their sole purpose in life.
Again, I think I said it earlier, like, it's not my job to control them.
Right.
It's your job to teach them.
Right. Like, exactly. So
it's hard as fuck.
It is. And it's like, and it's hard to try to do it while, because you kind of touched on this earlier where it comes to, like, we were raised very, very much like tough love or whatever. And spanking, like, one, spanking doesn't work with my kids anyways, but I'm very adamantly, like, anti-spanking with my children. I because it makes no sense to not, like, if somebody's doing, if they're doing something wrong, instead of hurting them and, like, just being like, all right, well, now you're, now I'm going to just traumatize you into doing the right thing, instead of, like, sitting down and explaining, hey, this is why this is not the right thing to do. Right. Let's talk about it.
That's actually a good point, because, like, when Finley was very little, there were a few instances where I spanked him. Again, I was very young, feeling my way out for parenting. Mm-hmm. And that probably stopped by the time he was two or three. I was like, okay, like, there are better ways to parent than just hitting my kid, obviously. And with Foster, like, we've never really been big on spanking, but I remember one specific time that he was putting a blanket on Elsa's head, and he kept doing it, and he was probably 2.5, 3 years old at the time, and, you know, I would tell him to stop, and at one point, Elsa was growling at him, Tuna was growling at him, and, you know, she doesn't growl, like, it's right. not, she's very, very chill, and I was afraid he was gonna bite her, so he went to do it again, and just kind of out of, like, reflex and shock and fear, because I was afraid that my dog might snap at him, mm-hmm. I, like, flapped his hand, and the first thing he did was, like, look at me like I had broken all trust in the world, right. like I had just totally ruined his framing of what parents would do to him, and then the second thing he did was hit me back,
right,
and, like, yelling at him doesn't work, because it just gets him more frustrated and he will yell right back at you. Mm-hmm. Because, and I, this is like his neurodivergence. Like, I always joke that I'm not a religious person, but I'm like, but if there's a God and he puts people on this earth for a reason, Foz's reason is to teach people how to be patient, because you absolutely have to deal with him with patience or you immediately make the situation work. Worse. And I think that that's true for all children. I think that no matter how your child reacts in the moment, if you yell at your kid and they stop doing what you don't want them to be doing, or you hit your kid and they stop doing what you don't want to be them to be doing, like, or they're like Foster and they just push back harder, the effect is really the same. Like, you're not getting the point you wanted to get across. You're not teaching them something. You're not bettering them as a human being. But with Foster, it's just extremely evident that right. it's not working, because right. whether your kid yells back at you or hits you back, they want to. I guarantee fucking to you, as a kid who got yelled at, as a kid who got spanked, they fucking want to do it back. Mm-hmm. Okay. And they're not doing it because they're scared of you. And right. Foster, he just gives zero fucks. Like, he will yell back at you. He will hit you back. And I think that that's a valuable lesson, because I think that's what all kids want to do when they're yelled at or they're hit, is to hurt you back, because you're hurting them.
Right. And so I don't think parenting with fear is super effective.
100%.
Like, I think, speaking as somebody, because, like you said, like, we were both raised on that, like, you do what I say, and you,
because I said so.
Yeah, and spanking and all of that, like, it wasn't very effective, because I never felt like, when it came to, like, the more, like, later points in my adolescence where there were things that I wanted to talk to my, or I should have opened up to my parents about, I was scared to, because I was like, well, are they going to whip my ass? Or are they going to, like, what bad thing is going to happen? I don't feel like I'm too terrified of them right. to actually talk about the things, like, yes, I did something wrong.
And, hey, and guess what? Guess what? Like, I'm still fucking like that, Mom and Dad. I'm still doing it. I'm still not talking to anybody about my shit.
Great. Hey, I love that.
So,
but, like,
if you are spanking and yelling at your children consistently, again, I don't want to act like I'm judging, because I feel like I've been there, I've done it, okay?
Right.
But just keep in mind that my issues are a result of being raised in fear of my parents.
Right.
And I wasn't beat. My parents never left a mark on me. You know, like, I was not physically abused to that extent. I was not tortured mentally. Mm-hmm. Like, they just did not parent me gently. They did not make me feel like it was safe to talk about my feelings or my problems or things I did wrong and discuss those openly, because there was always going to be some kind of punishment, whether that was being yelled at or being spanked or even, and I'm not going to say I don't agree with grounding in, you know, circumstances where, you know, if your kid is out drinking and they're 15 years old, like, okay, maybe they need some privileges taken away, right. But like, you have to do it in a way that you're not, you can't ruin their life because they made a mistake.
Right.
You know, like, you need to explain to them, listen, this is why that's unsafe. Here's how we can avoid it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's best if you don't go to that particular friend's house by yourself. Like, maybe they can come over here and hang out, whatever. But just be aware that you don't want to make your children afraid to talk to you.
Right. And you also have to keep in mind, like, mistakes are the way, like, I make mistakes as an adult all the time. And I mean, as somebody, like, as a manager of a, like, of employees, I encourage them, like, mistakes are okay, because that's how you're going to learn, and it's the same with kids, but for some reason, children don't have as much, like...
We don't give them any grace.
Yes, exactly. Like, we just expect them to behave all of the time, and that's not,
right.
Like, they're still learning.
Right. And, like, they're learning by example for the most part, too.
Right, right.
You know? So, like, there's a lot of things that I am obviously, as an adult, not doing a great job at. So, I can't expect my teenage son to keep his room immaculate or keep my house clean or do chores when I am coming home from work and being like, fuck these dishes, and going to bed. You know what right. I mean? Like... They're learning from you. Like, they're not learning because I come home and I say, why the fuck isn't your room clean? You know? That's not teaching them anything other than you're an asshole.
Right.
Like, there's also social problems with neurodivergency. Again, my two children are night and day. So, Finley's social problems are more that he is anxious. He's afraid to talk to people. He's afraid to make new friends. And it's not like it's impossible for him. He's made a lot of really good friends in the last couple of years that he's really clicked with. But he's just kind of really unsure of himself. And he is afraid to talk to anybody at a store if he needs help in a store or has to order food or whatever. Like, it is... terrifying to him. Like, he clams up. Like, literally today we went to Chipotle for dinner and I made him order his burrito because usually I pull it up on my phone what he ordered last time and I just order it off the screen, and it wouldn't pull up my old order, and I was like, I don't know what you want, you'll have to order. And they were really, really busy and the lady was going really, really fast, and she's like, do you want mild, hot, or medium? And he's like, mild, I guess. And so she put the green salsa on it, and he was like, I didn't want fucking salsa, what the hell? And then he's like, we get back to the table, and he's like, I didn't even get what I wanted. And I was like, what didn't you get? And he's like, well, I wanted lettuce, and I didn't get lettuce, and I didn't want salsa on it. And I was like, well, why didn't you say something? And he was like, well, she didn't offer lettuce. And I was like... Poor baby. And then, like, when we were checking out, the guy was like, do you want anything else? And I was like, do you want cheese with your chips? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, two chips and queso. And so we get back to the table. He's like, I don't know why I said I wanted cheese. I don't like their queso. And I like he was so worked up about having to order that when I asked if he wanted queso, he's like, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah,
just get me the fuck out of this line. I just want to go to the table. And then, so he struggles in that way. Foster is more like me in the extent that he is very, very outgoing. Mm-hmm. He's very quick to make friends, but he's also very like my way or the highway. And again, I think this is kind of just him not understanding social concepts that like, when you're playing with somebody, like, you're playing with them, not at them. You know what I mean? Like, and him and Cora butt heads a lot. Like, they're always super excited to play each other.
Both have the same exact idea as far as that goes.
Yeah, like, they are super stoked to see each other. Like, when I say Cora's coming up or we're going to go see Cora, he's 100% so excited to go play with her or whatever. Like, the second they get in the room together, they're like, what the fuck? Like, you're not going to just do whatever it is I want you to do without me even saying it. Like, why are you your own person? And so, like, that's an issue is his bossiness, I guess.
Right, right. And that's what Cora is, too. And I think, and she...
Over-assertive.
Yeah, yeah. Assertiveness, I guess. Like, she constantly has issues, like, at school where she's like, this kid was mean to me, or this kid was mean to me. And then come to find out, it's, like, because Cora was, like, okay, we're going to play this way. And the kid was like, but I don't want to. And she's like, well, fuck you.
Right, exactly.
Like, but I think it's funny because Sydney's the same way when it comes to antisocialness. Because why do we have the same children? But, like, Sydney's to where, like, she will, if she's like, I want to call grandma and ask her if she can come get me. Or I want to see if she can pick this up for me. And I'm like, okay, well, then call her. And she's like, can you call her for me?
Right.
You can call your own grandmother. Like, you can talk to her. Like, I constantly, I have to order food for her and stuff like that because she won't talk to the people. But, like, it's to the point where it's like, okay, but you also need to, like, if it's your dad, text your own dad.
Right.
Or call your own dad.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's so funny because even with texting, if you text Finley, he's such a dry texter, and he'll even say it himself. I'm just a really dry texter. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll be like, hey, what are you doing today? Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
How was school? Fine. What do you want for dinner? I don't know. Like, it's one-word answers across the board. Like, you cannot converse with him via text. Foster has an iPod, so, like, when he's at home on Wi-Fi, I'll text him, and his texts are so much more, like, cohesive and warm and, like, conversational than his 14-year-old brother.
Right.
Like, that's the difference in personality. Like, right. He's just so much more, like, at ease mm-hmm. with socializing than Finley is, but... He has a harder time getting, like, Finley is great at making friends, but the friends have to come to him.
Right.
You know? Okay. Foster is great at going to people, but then I feel like some people, like, if they don't mesh with his personality, he tends to push them away.
Because
he's very abrasive.
Right.
Some problems as a parent with neurodivergence, and I mentioned this before, with ADHD or autism, overstimulation is a big issue. So if there's a lot of noise, a lot of sights going on, a lot of touching, like, it's very easy to get worked up because of that. And if you are neurotypical, you may not even understand what I mean by that, but if you have a neurodivergence, if you're prone to overstimulation, you know exactly what I mean. It's like... When Foster was first born, I remember Finley would be watching a video on his phone, and we'd be in the car, and Foster hated the car when he was little, so he was always crying. So we'd be driving, I would be having to pay attention to the road, something would be playing on the radio, Finley's watching a video in the back, Foster's screaming his goddamn head off, Dave's trying to talk to me, and, like, literally I would be losing my mind. Because mm-hmm. there's so much going on at once, and it's like your brain just fizzles out and is like, I cannot compute anything because everything is going on. And, you know, it happens to me at work sometimes if there's a lot of people, like, commotion going on at once and somebody's trying to talk to me and there's somebody over there yelling and I can hear the beeping from all the registers, like, same thing happens. But when you're a parent and you have a new baby, especially... You're in a constant state of being overstimulated. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like Cassie said, her kids were hanging on her all the time. Like, if you're breastfeeding, you literally have a child attached to you almost constantly. You have a child who needs things. You have things you need to be doing. Foster has, at any given moment, YouTube going and something on his iPad and a toy going off. And then Finley's in his room playing PlayStation or whatever. There's like 900 noises going on at once. So being overstimulated is common and just you know, there's nothing you can do about it. And that's awful as a neurodivergent person.
It's so bad. And I think, I honestly, I have mixed feelings on this because I think like, I'm very open about overstimulation at this point because I'm like, it's something that I struggle with and I've struggled with for years. And, my kids, whenever they're all, like, just talking and there's devices going and all this stuff and I'm just trying to think, I can lose my shit. But, like, my older kids at this point, they're like, they have gotten to the point where they're, like, recognizing, they're like, okay, mom is overstimulated, and they know what that is. Like, they know what overstimulation is, and I'm like, I don't know how I feel about, like, I think that's a good thing. Hey, mom is overstimulated, like, and knowing what that is, and knowing, like, hey, let's go in the other room, or let's keep it down because of that. But, like, I think my mom has some of, her and I have talked about it, like, especially after I got diagnosed with ADHD, because she's like, yeah, I think some of those symptoms, like, I was reading her the questionnaire that they give you and everything, and I was reading her some of those, and she's like, yeah, I mean, I definitely relate to a lot of that. And so I think she has some of the same issues as far as overstimulation goes as I did. And I had no clue. I just thought it was like mom was just pissed off at all of us because it's not something we talked about.
Right.
And it's not something I think she even understood.
Yeah.
But I kind of like that my kids recognize that, and they can recognize it when they're getting overstimulated themselves.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say is, like, I honestly don't think I've really talked about it with my kids very much, and even less for my own benefit of, you know, them leaving me the fuck alone when I'm overstimulated, but more for their benefit because Foster very clearly gets overstimulated, right. And I think it would be really good for him for me to say, I'm sorry, I'm not angry at you. Mm-hmm. I'm just feeling overstimulated. There's a lot going on, right. And it's making me feel stressed out. And, you know, I just need a minute to relax, if you can give that to me. And then he would be more prone when he's feeling that way to say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, act badly or whatever. I'm just overstimulated. Maybe I could take a minute. You know what I mean? Right. Like, and right. He could recognize that in himself. Like, I think that's great that they recognize that.
Right.
And hopefully it'll help them as they grow up to advocate for themselves in those situations when they are feeling like, okay, things are getting to be too much and I need to step away, and they'll be like comfortable with saying, I just need a minute to decompress. Okay. So give me a second. So I think that's awesome.
I'm something right. Oh my God.
You're such a good mom.
Okay. Barely.
Problems establishing a routine. So that's ADHD and autism. This is one of those things that's very different between those. Autistic people tend to thrive on routine. They absolutely have to have it. Like, they will fall apart without it.
Mm-hmm.
People with ADHD need a routine, but they also refuse. Like, they want it. They need it. They know they need it. But their brains are like, there's no dopamine in doing the same thing over and over. Right. I'm not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bring me joy. Yeah. I'm recondoing that shit. So as a parent, routine is extremely helpful. Like, this is what time we eat breakfast. This is what time we eat lunch. This is what time we eat dinner. Here's when nap time is. Here's when we do homework. Here's how much TV you get to watch, et cetera, et cetera. As a neurodivergent parent, I am literally like, okay, my kids need less screen time. Like, Finley, I'm less concerned about at this point. He's 14 years old. I feel like he can, for the most part, manage himself. I try to make sure he's in bed at a decent time on school nights, and that's about as far as it goes. With Foster, I'm like, I really need to make sure he's not just plugged into YouTube 24 hours a day, because he will be if I don't stop him. But neurodivergent me is sitting on the couch watching TikToks, and before I know it, it's 6 p.m. and he's been watching YouTube all day and I've been watching TikTok all day, and neither of us have accomplished anything productive or decent, and we're both now overstimulated by the internet. Thanks. because you just, you know, you get sucked into wormholes and hyper-focus, and you, holy shit, did we even eat lunch today? Like, It's really difficult. So that's a definite issue. There is the unending judgment from family or strangers. So Foster, like I said, he's the hyperactive type. Finley was never good in public settings. Like, I remember we had a lot of trouble. We don't go out to restaurants a whole lot. But I remember when he was little, we did for a while, and he was really bad at restaurants. Like, not like a terror, but like, he had a hard time staying in his seat. He always wanted to see what the people in the booth behind us were doing. He needed toys and stimulation constantly. Foster, literally, when we used to go grocery shopping, when he first started like sitting in the cart, the kid would just scream to hear his own voice. And I don't mean like crying, like literally just, you know, like making noise constantly. And I remember I used to go to the Aldi that I worked at, and I would have him in there, and I would walk away to go find tortilla chips or something, and I would run into an employee, and I would be like, "Whose fucking kid is screaming like that?" And they'd be like, "Oh my god, it's so annoying." And I'd be like, "You asshole, that's my kid." And they would be like, "God damn it." But there were people also, like, obviously, like, I was joking with them and not, like, trying to really rope them into being an asshole. But like, you have people when your kid is throwing a tantrum who are giving you that look like, why can't you shut your baby up, you know? Or like, they act like you shouldn't be out to eat if your kid can't sit perfectly still for an hour or whatever. And then, you know, when you're at family functions and your kid is overstimulated and they lose their damn minds and everybody is like, Jesus, you just don't know what the fuck you're doing as a parent. And they don't understand that your child isn't exactly like their child or other neurotypical children, and it requires different things. So, you know, there's that constant, I don't know, shade people are throwing at you.
Right.
Like, you're not
really good enough. And I don't think I don't think I really understood that until after I had Cora, because, like, my kids were never ones to throw tantrum in public. They were always pretty, I mean, fairly, they had their moments, but they were always fairly well-behaved in public. But Cora's just, I mean, she's just all over the place, and it's really difficult to kind of rein her in. And I remember, like working in a public setting, especially where there's lots of children, people would be like, oh my god, will that kid stop crying? And I'm like, I've been that mom. Like, I've been there. And one thing, I know a lot of places are kind of doing, a lot of, like, larger places, like malls, or like amusement parks and stuff are doing like quiet areas or sensory rooms and stuff like that. We'd taken Cora to an amusement park, this summer, for Gunner's birthday, and I'd gone with our friend Chantel, and I was extremely overstimulated. She was extremely overstimulated. And that was the very first time I'd used one of those sensory rooms, and it was the best experience of my life, of my parenting life, because everything's so chill, and it's like, you know, the lights are calm, and all of a sudden, you know, I had this wild child who's just like, can't control her emotions and is just kind of acting out all day because there's so many things going on, and she just doesn't know, like, she wants to go there, and she wants to do this, and she wants to do this, but she also is, like, all of these things are happening around her. Same thing's happening in my brain. So we went and sat in there, and all of a sudden, she's just, like, the most well-behaved kid. Like, after sitting in there for, like, half an hour and just chilling and, you know, kind of decompressing, it just works wonders.
So. I feel like Finley wasn't always the greatest in public. Like, that was kind of one of our struggle, like, few struggles with him as a kid. But he wasn't terrible. But Foster has really, like, made me more empathetic for those parents. As, like, I work in a, like you said, a public setting. Mm-hmm. And when I have those kids that come in that, like, are running around, touching everything, being, you know, quote-unquote nuisances, they're screaming, they're in the cart, and they're just wailing through the whole store, like, I'm not rolling my eyes or heavy sighing. Like, I look at their parents or look at them and smile and try to do what I can to, you know, hey, it's fine. I get it. Like, what can I do to make your day easier, Mom? Right. Like, do you need me to, can I get the kid a granola bar? Or, like, I've literally thought about, like, buying fruit snacks or something like that to keep in my office so that, like, when there's a kid throwing a fit, like, asking, like, hey, is it cool if they have a package of fruit snacks? Like, will that make them feel better? Because sometimes, like, you'll notice that I say all the time, like, we're our kids' safe spaces. So, like, my kid, Foster, acts worse with us than he does with anybody else because he knows that I'm not going to murder him. You know what I mean? Like, he knows there's a hard limit with me. I'm not going to hurt him.
Right.
And I'm going to love him no matter what. He doesn't know that necessarily about his teacher or about strangers. So if he's, when he was with his babysitter when he was little, he was always super well behaved. At school, he's much more behaved than he is at home. And I mean, he still struggles, but he doesn't have meltdowns like he does at home. And then he comes home and he acts, you know, totally wild. And it's because he knows that I'm safe. And so, like, I'm like at the grocery store when a kid is losing their shit, I'm like, maybe if they talk to a stranger, you know, maybe if I'm like, hey bud, what's wrong? Like, what's going on? What's so bad? You know, then it'll kind of take him out of that and calm him down a little bit. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on, this doesn't have anything to do with neurodivergence, but given the whole topic of this podcast, I think it's important to touch on breaking the cycle of abuse or trauma in parenting is something that's really, really difficult. You know, we talked about a listener's story the other day and, you know, how his dad was really abusive and, you know, they ended up sort of making amends before he passed away, but the listener had decided that they weren't going to have children because they were so worried about that part of them showing up and them damaging another child, like they were, you know, hurt. And I think it's really important when you have children to address the ways that you were mistreated, neglected on any level, like whether it was to a traumatic level or, you know, just a sort of simple kind of thing, but to assess how your parents did and try to do at least a little better. Like, not everybody has to completely break the cycle. That's the goal, of course, but, you know, you should be at least attempting to chip away at things and recognizing that that's hard to do because if you came from a house, whether it was straight up terror, horror movie abusive, or it was just a little bit not great, maybe you weren't, like, you were parented with tough love or whatever, or your parents were emotionally unavailable, or there was just a lot of stress or whatever, you may not have been taught skills that you need to be a parent of a healthy human being. So not being afraid to reach out to other people and, you know, asking how they do things, not afraid to talk to a therapist and see how you could be doing things better. My therapist all the time, when I'm like, oh, it was a really hard week with Foster, or, you know, we're dealing with this with Finley, or we had this thing happen, you know, she'll give me advice like, hey, why don't you try doing this, you know, and see how they react to that. So, like, talking to a therapist about that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then kind of along with that is, I kind of mentioned it, like, with cleaning your plate and having to sit at the table and stuff like that. There's a lot of rules from my childhood that initially as a parent I enforced out of habit, kind of like, you have to try this, you have to sit at the table when you eat dinner, don't jump on my couch, etc. And it wasn't because I cared about those things. Like, would I appreciate it if we ate dinner as a family at the table and talked? Like, sure, yeah, whatever. But is it something that is vitally important to me? No, I have wood floors in my house. I don't give a shit about my couch. Like, if you make a mess, we can clean it up. It's not the end of the world.
Right.
So allowing Foster to eat on the couch to get him to eat something and make it more peaceful for everybody works for us. And I don't have to enforce the rule of eating at the table just because that's what I had to do as a kid. I don't have to enforce the rule. Like, I don't have to tell him he has to stop jumping on the couch just because I wasn't allowed to jump on the couch as a kid. And that goes for deeper things too. Like, you know, we talked earlier about, like, having, how I feel like I should be having more conversations with Finley about how am I doing, how are you doing, etc. And that's something that's hard for me because it wasn't something that I was brought up with. But just recognizing the areas where you could have been raised better, and then instilling those in your parenting style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I don't have anything to add to it, but yes.
So that's all we have on parenting. We do have a few listener bright spots today. Ryan says, my bright spot is my amazing, loving girlfriend that goes to great lengths to make sure I'm okay. I've never felt more loved or cared for. It's been a hard week, but I'm so grateful to have her in my life.
That's sweet.
What a lucky man. I wish I was dating his girlfriend.
Amber and Ashley have a, well, Amber posted the bright spot, but okay, Amber has a bright spot. I was blessed with a huge surprise, and because of it, my wife and I were able to put a down payment on this new-to-us baby, which is a new, looks like a Jeep, right? Yeah, oh, a new Jeep. Looks beautiful. Congratulations.
Nice.
And then she also said, we received blessings in many different forms. Because of this, all of the children living in our home are going to be abundantly blessed this holiday. So wonderful. Yay. And Tim got to hear live music, which is always, always a bright spot. I can't wait to hear live music again. I haven't heard it in so long.
Oh, actually, just talking to somebody in the group chat, Jules had bought her daughter. She said, I'm thinking about buying my daughter a tickets to see her favorite, one of her favorite bands. Mm-hmm. Because they're only like $40, and I thought it would be nice for me to be able to take her to her first concert, you know, with me and mm-hmm. her together. And then later she mentioned that it was the Front Bottoms, and I was like, oh my god, when you said her favorite band, she's 14 or 15, and I was like, I assumed it was somebody I've never fucking heard of, because I'm old. And I was like, I fucking love the Front Bottoms, and they're amazing live. I saw them once in, like, 2013, and I was like, they're fantastic. But I had told my niece Riley, when the pandemic started, she had posted a TikTok with a Front Bottom song as the sound, and I was like, are you just using the sound, or do you like the Front Bottoms? Because if you like the Front Bottoms, as soon as they get back to playing live, like, I will take you to a show, because I'm excited. But they're not playing anywhere around here anytime soon, but
we got, Sydney and I got tickets to see Beach Bunny in May, and I'm, like, counting down. You don't know Beach Bunny? You should.
Is it K-pop?
No. It's just, like, indie pop-ish. Like, they sing that song Prom Queen. But anyways, so we're supposed to go see Beach Bunny in May, and I'm, like, just dying, because I'm, like, I haven't seen live music. Listen, the last time I saw live music was when we went to see the Jonas Brothers in concert.
Mine was when you and I went to go see Brand New.
Which was amazing. It was amazing.
But like 100 years ago.
Yeah, 2016. But I think, like, because 2019, Sydney and I took her to her first concert, and I took her to see the Jonas Brothers, and they were wonderful, too. But I haven't seen live music, like, basically since the pandemic started, and I'm just dying to.
Yeah, Dave was gonna, when the pandemic started, like, literally in February, he was like, I'm gonna buy tickets to take Finley to see Green Day, because he had gotten into Green Day. And he's like, I'm going to buy them for him for his birthday in August, because they're going to be around here then. And then the pandemic happened.
Fucking pandemic.
Ruined our lives.
Let's hope Omicron just slows its roll, because I've got some live music to see in May. So.
Yeah, weird transformer. Our next episode will just be kind of a reflection. We'll talk about, you know, what we're doing, life changes, therapy.
I've been very depressed, so
how we're feeling.
It's gonna be a really dark reflection.
Maybe it'll improve before then.
Fingers crossed. We got 2 weeks.
All right, guys, we will catch you in a couple of weeks. Until then, stay safe, stay sane, have a good couple of holidays in there, and enjoy.
We'll see you next time. I mixed it up.